Hey, 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 everybody. I have a special guest with me today.
Hi, I'm Jasmine, filling in for Angela the mom.
And I'm Raja the daughter. And this is
Talking Brown Sugar.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm all right. How are you?
I am not too shabby.
That's good. That's good.
Yes, so this is Talking Brown Sugar, the podcast, everything sweet and a little spicy. Don't forget to find us online.
Facebook and Instagram.
At Talking Brown Sugar.
Email.
At talkingbrown.sugar@gmail.com.
And YouTube.
Yes, you can enjoy Talking Brown Sugar on the go by finding us on your preferred podcast app. And don't forget to leave us a review and leave us 5 stars. And we're going to slide right into the sugar bowl with some random thoughts. Jasmine, do you have any random thoughts you want to share with the audience?
I don't have any random thoughts right now.
That's fine. I'll just share mine. I guess I'm like learning and practicing how to speak with intention, but not obsessed so much to the point that I'm not taking action or I'm keeping the silence for the sake of peace. And I feel like it's like a middle child thing I picked up early in life that I'm like shedding and working on doing now more in adulthood.
Right. No, I can definitely understand like people pleasing. I don't know. I feel like I have issues with that sometimes too. I feel like I'm still learning how to get out of it.
Right. Exactly. People pleasing. And it's like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm working on that, and it's just a little difficult when you're learning how to set boundaries and then stick to them.
Right.
So, I'm happy about that, because it's like, I don't know, I feel like I'm leaning more into who I am and who I want to be, but also just like, you know, how to keep Sam standing on business.
Right. And I feel like that's something that, and I don't know how this would tie in, but I do feel like we kind of go through these different seasons of our life where we kind of figure out who we are and stick to that. And then we progress and we change some more. So I feel like it's a normal thing to do.
Yeah, we're constantly evolving.
Right.
Thank you for being a friend. Driving down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew. You would see the biggest gift would be for me. And the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend.
Sugar Cubes, aka the news, where we put a little sugar in your cup.
Yes, the first story we have up today. Jonathan Major is sentenced in the domestic violence case. So after he was ordered, you know, to complete a year-long counseling program. So he avoided jail time earlier this week for assaulting his ex-girlfriend in a high-profile case that derailed the once-promising star's career. So remember, he's 34 years old. The last thing people can remember him starring in was Creed 3, also some Marvel films. People had, you know, big plans for him, but that changed. So he has to complete a 52-week in-person batterers intervention program in Los Angeles, where he also lives. And he also has to continue with mental health therapy that his lawyers are saying he's participating in now. And if he doesn't complete the 52-week in-person program, he will face up to a year in jail if he's being found in violation of those terms. And it also includes a no contact order with his former girlfriend. Grace Jabari. So.
How old did you say he was?
34.
For real?
34. How old did you think he was? Bye.
Bye. Dang. Okay.
No, yeah, everybody talks about him having a civil rights face.
Yeah.
I know. I understand.
Yeah, because I really thought he was pushing 40.
No, yeah, I did think he was a little older, late 30s. But no, he's just 4 years.
That's crazy.
Older than us.
But also, I did see that. But I've also seen, like, a few things where it was like, he was trying to get away from her and he got this sentence based on him pushing her. How true is that? Because honestly, I haven't really looked super into it because I'm like,
Well, the thing we have to pay attention to is the jury also found him guilty. So they saw all the evidence of what you said. You know, everybody saw the viral clip of him like running from her in the city, but there was also the back and forth with the driver who saw what happened in the car. And then, of course, police called to their house or the home they were sharing before, where she, like, she was, you know, in distress, and he was there. It was a lot of stuff in the air with that, but they have a history of domestic violence in their relationship, and I think all of that played into the jury finding him guilty. So I just hope for him that he can go through the program, and he's going to be okay. Like, he's still a celebrity, he's gonna be all right, I think.
Yeah, because if he did because again, like I said, all I've seen is just like people saying, oh, well, he just pushed her, and that's what this all is based off of. But you know, people lie.
No, and then you gotta think about the recordings too. Like, abuse isn't just physical, there was manipulation.
Verbal,
you're telling her to be like Coretta Scott King. How's she gonna do that? She's not even black. You're asking for the impossible,
yeah.
Already. So, yeah, it's just like, no. There's a lot of stuff, like, a lot of layers to that that I think is, like, difficult when talking about cases of domestic abuse because, you know, you don't know what's going on because we're not in a relationship. And they're celebrities, so we're not going to know what's going on.
Right, and then people will say whatever, because, like, it was the whole narrative of, like, oh, they're just trying to lock him up because he's black and he was with a white woman. I'm not one of the people that believe that. I believe, like, if he was doing what... Mm-hmm. And obviously he was found guilty, so obviously there was some
evidence.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then he needs to be locked up. Like, that's how I feel about it. I feel like, honestly, for me, I'm a little bit less forgiving when it comes to abuse of any type. I feel like he should be locked up for it. But, again, that's just me. Because of therapy, how I feel in regards to
him getting therapy. In the program for a year, on top of his personal therapy, I'm hoping that helps him, or it starts him on a path of reconciling whatever it is that makes him want to be abusive, or you know, have an abusive relationship. Also, like, maybe she might need some too. Some counseling. Oh, yeah. She's also getting counseling because they were, you know, like he, you know, said that she was abusive to him too, which can happen in relationships. It can work both ways. So I think this is an interesting ruling, though.
Yeah.
Like you said, he's avoiding jail time, but like hopefully it gets him on a path of healing where he...
And as far as her, what did they really say if anything was going to happen to her? No, they didn't, because
the case was on, like, it was focused on him. I don't know if he counterpressed or, I don't know, that's not the right terminology. I don't know if he had a countersuit. There we go. Gotcha. I don't know if he had a countersuit for her because, you know, it's just like a long line of abuse between the two of them. So it's good that they're separated.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, they both can go their separate ways and get better.
Yeah.
Now, you know, got young lady Aoki Lee Simmons Bossip. I love this article title. Someone called Kimora Aoki Lee Simmons confirmed 65-year-old Vitriol Asif is her boyfriend after strange St. Bart's PDA. So, you know, online, everybody's probably seen it, the picture of Aiki Lee Simmons kissing a man who is 4 decades older than her and calling him her boyfriend. So once that kiss went like viral, she's 21, by the way, he's 65.
It's something weird.
Once it went viral, she then went to social media to share a video confirming that they were together. So it was like documenting their last day in St. Bart's. And she was just, you know, calling him baby after every sentence. And he was talking about like, where you want to go next? And she was talking about, you know, I want to go to Japan. I want to go this, I want to go that. And randomly he brought up that Mary J. Blige wanted to date him. I was like, what does that have to do with the conversation you had? It's all weird, but it's still random. It was like,
yeah, I don't know. The weirdest part, I mean, this obviously not the weirdest part, but hearing you say that she said he is her boyfriend, he's 65 years old, it's crazy to me. That is insane.
65-year-old boo thing.
Like, what?
But it's like, he is, I don't know how much the money, but he's a restaurateur mogul. So she was talking to him about, you know, like, you know, this trip was last minute. She shared with everybody, you know, he's buying me everything when I get there because the trip is last minute. So I've had time to pack. He's just going to buy me everything there. So it's definitely like the financial aspect that she's looking at because he's 65.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've seen him, man, but y'all can look him up. Vittorio Asif. You'll see it. He's 65. I know what you're looking at. As a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
It's
like,
the money.
And then, I don't know. I will never not feel like it's just really weird for someone that much older, especially somebody who's so close to the teens. She's 21.
Right.
She was 19 2 years ago. Like, and he's 65. Like, they have nothing in common. Except for, I mean,
not even celebrity for him, because I don't
know that he has. And then I can't even say necessarily they both have their own money, because like, she's a nepo baby and he has his own funds that probably that he's had for years, so they don't even really have that in common. Both of their income comes from two different places, if that makes sense. So what is there that they have in common?
Apparently not much, because they're now broken up. That came right like the next day or two. That
the next day is insane.
Yeah, they split. So like less than a week later, you know, after the first kiss went public, they split. So it's like, I guess maybe that kiss and it going viral was probably too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now it's like some messy source, because they don't say who exactly was, you know, telling people their business.
Right.
It says the source also told the outlet that Aoki had met him in St. Bart's, where she and her family are apparently known to travel. So they might have been running in circles
right
in St. Bart's, but that's still weird.
Yeah.
And I have
a question. I don't know if it was mentioned at all. But when he said all of that, like how Mary J. Blige wanted to date him, what has Mary said about all of this? Because I mean,
Mary was like, don't put me in none of this. I don't think she said anything. I haven't seen her say anything.
What does Mary have to say?
But everybody thought it was weird that he brought it up, because it was like a fetishy type.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, trying to tell her, like, that's probably the closest thing he could connect to her. Like, you know, another black woman who's a celebrity and beautiful. She wanted me.
And that's like, well, that was a lie, because I can't see Mary. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the lady, but.
Right.
That's still my.
But that would have been more age appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can see that bit more than I can see this.
Even then, how old is she? In her 40s? 50s?
Yeah, I think she in her 50s.
Okay. I don't know. I still would have felt like it was weird. Because even then, but they're much older, so they're more established. Like, definitely she would be way more established, but I still feel like it would be weird.
And so, like, the source still be messy talking to Masum. It was never a thing. You know, Aoki is learning to navigate her private life in a public sphere, and that can be difficult. So, you know, however she, you know, is concerned that, you know, how people are talking to her and viewing her, and I'm pretty sure her mom, Gamora, was concerned to see her in that kind of relationship due to what she herself went through.
Yeah.
You know, with, like, her age difference between her and Russell Simmons. They met, apparently, when she was 17 and he was 35. So, right. And that was through music, the music industry. But Russell said, of course, the relationship didn't begin until she was 18. Like, that's much better.
And then I still feel like it's a lie. I feel like that's a lie.
And so, they were married in 1998. And she was still young. And so, like, I know that's probably hard for Kimura to see her young daughter with an older man, a much older man.
Right.
And I bet she probably has some, you know, let her know, like, even if you are going to be entertaining an older man, you got to think about who you are.
Right.
And when and where you're doing that. So I hope that she's safe at the very least and taking care of herself and knows how to move in the medium. And people say, that's why Beyonce don't talk to us. Unless she wants to, you know, it's very strategic.
Right. And honestly, I'm going to be honest when it comes to that, too, that whole, that's why Beyonce doesn't talk. I feel like, I was just saying the other day, I was like, I miss when celebrities did not tell us all their business. I miss it. I miss when, like, because I don't want to see, you know, a lot of stuff I don't want to know. Yeah. I don't want to hear about.
I keep the mystery alive.
Yeah.
In food industry news, Chick-fil-A will soon allow antibiotics in its chicken. Here's when and why. So Chick-fil-A will shift to allow some antibiotics in its chicken starting in the spring, overturning a 2014 commitment to use only antibiotic-free chicken. So a statement from the restaurant's chain's website. We said, to maintain the supply and high quality of chicken you expect from us, Chick-fil-A will shift from a no antibiotics ever, or NAE, to a no antibiotics important to human medicine, NAHM, starting the spring of 2024. So according to that announcement, chicken antibiotics will only be used if the animal and those around it were to become sick. So the antibiotics used to treat the poultry are not intended for humans. So it's in accordance with the FDA requirements. All antibiotics must be cleared from the chicken system before it is considered available for the chicken supply. The United States Department of Agriculture audits and verifies the suppliers are meeting the requirements of Chick-fil-A's NAHM commitment.
I'm going to be honest in saying that I feel like they were kind of testing the water. I feel like they probably already started allowing the some antibiotic chicken. I feel like, and I don't know why I feel that way, but just seeing it, I'm like, I feel like they're testing the waters to see how people will react if they talk. I don't know. I just don't have a lot of faith in like big corporations, to be honest. But I don't know. I feel like they probably already started and just wanted to test the water and see how people would respond.
That's a good point. And I think you're right, too, when we think about means of production and our consumption as just the U.S., not even considering other countries, what we import, export. But when I think about how, like, New York and California, I've talked about this on the show before, but, like, in New York and California, they have different labels on their food. Yeah. The same products that we get here in our state, in North Carolina, but they have different laws that are just applicable.
Yeah, to they got those cancer warnings on everything.
Cancer warnings, right. The dyes, you know, like, letting consumers know, like, you can buy this, but you are at risk of all these other symptoms and byproducts if you consume this product. So I agree that they're, like you said, they're testing the water, because they said a lot of other companies had posted similar announcements, like Tyson Foods, one of the largest chicken producers in the United States, also moved away from its pledge of no antibiotics ever. And so now it's just making you think too, like, why do chickens get sick?
Listen, I'm gonna be honest with you, Tyson. their chicken is mostly breading, like ever since
bye.
I don't think that's ever been high quality. They're just giving us chicken bread, like
chicken bread.
Yeah, I don't like Tyson. I'm like, oh, are they gonna start giving us good chicken? But no, they're gonna get worse apparently. But with the California thing that you mentioned, it made me think about something I read recently, very recently. I think it was the other day. Did you hear the thing about the Lunchables?
Oh my gosh, yes. And I have a Lunchable in the fridge just looking at me.
I told my dad, I was like, hey, do you know, like, there's lead in the Lunchables. He was like, which, like, he wanted to know more information. I was reading it.
All of them.
I was like, I think I read the chicken. I mean, not the chicken, the turkey and cheese, but I used to eat that.
All the, like, for, like, as a child, we like, want just a little snack.
He's like, I used to eat those with servants. So I was like, well. But yeah, and then the applesauce, the squeezable applesauce and the cinnamon. Did you read that too?
I used to. I'm not an applesauce. It's the Texas.
How did you read it? Read the article about that?
No.
So apparently, and then I'm just paraphrasing because I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but they're like in certain brands of the squeezable ones, the cinnamon was lead. The cinnamon in that was lead. It's not the the bigger brand. Let me look it up actually.
Yeah, with the food quality here, I'm not surprised.
And do you know there was an amount of lead that was acceptable? It's like, why is there lead acceptable in food that we're eating?
Yes. But that's comes with, you know, who we vote into office, and, you know, the president appoints people who look over those institutions that make the laws for the country to decide, you know, what's considered healthy food.
And then, so the brands are Wannabana,
apple. This is for the applesauce?
Yeah, apple cinnamon fruit puree. And these are like these, like little squeezable tubes. Those are for like.
Are these the ones marketed, of course, to like kids?
Yeah, like adults get them, but these are for little kids. And it's the, so these are recalled the Wannabana apple cinnamon fruit puree pouches.
I just assume all of them are bad. When I was looking at the Lunchable list, it wasn't just like the brand Lunchable. It was all of those little pre-packaged snack brands. Yeah, so even like the, I guess like the cheaper ones you could find that was like in Food Lion for like, I think they're like a dollar, but they're comparable to the Lunchable. They all have lead in them, just different amounts.
Hold on. Because now I'm trying to remember the name of it, because now I want to look and see if this, hold up, the, what's the name of, what about the Sargento thing? It's not going to look good, because
I don't remember seeing it, but it was more, it was so many different little brands in that picture. I might have to cover that next episode if we don't pull it up now. But it was just, like you said, shocking lead.
Yeah.
An acceptable amount of lead. And so I know that there are different metals like you need iron, different things that we have in our daily diet, but lead?
Lead is one of them.
Lead?
I don't know. I blame the people who be talking about boomers and be saying like the lead paint stare and stuff like that. I blame them. They manifest all of this. Because why else? I blame them. I feel like they manifested this because I didn't hear anything about lead, like not really, not as much until people started talking about lead paint stares. You know, the whole I don't want to say it's a trend, but like when people are talking about older people and how they just be staring. Yeah.
No, I definitely think, have you watched Abbott Elementary?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. So you know how Janine was like, we need to bring back Career Day?
Mm-hmm.
I think we should just do that for everybody. Just talk about different careers you could have. You know, maybe there's a food quality inspector type role. Let's just get some young people engaged
right
in that, because what the heck?
Yeah.
Can't have my Lunchable, my little, you know, with a little cooler or something.
And now I'm nervous about the Sargento balance breaks, because I eat those. I eat those now.
I'm not sure if that was on the list. We need to look and confirm, though. We need to talk about that the next time we plan a charcuterie board. Now you have to look, now you have to make a charcuterie board.
Yeah, because Sargento, that cheese, like the little cheese, and then they have one with Teddy Grahams and stuff too. Please don't tell me those got lit. Please.
Honestly, just assume so until we know for sure and can confirm it. I mean, if you know, audience, you can let us know too.
Yeah.
I want to shift a little bit to our next story. It's a little sad. Not a little sad. It makes me a little angry. The first Black-owned children's bookstore in Raleigh, North Carolina, forced to shut down due to death threats and hate mail. So the Liberation Station, the Black-owned children's bookstore in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina, is being forced to shut down after less than a year in business, during which the store received numerous death threats. As previously reported, the Miller family, you know, multiple Black entrepreneurs in the family, opened the Liberation Station alongside the husband and the children. They wanted to celebrate the brick and mortar location by being a hub for Black children where they could see themselves represented in literature books. However, several months after opening, Victoria Miller said her family began receiving death threats on Monday, earlier this month. She posted on the bookstore's official Instagram page explaining to the followers why the beloved children's store would close soon. She was saying since they opened in September, they faced numerous threats following the opening of the store. Some of them they tried to brush off, while others were disturbing, including phone calls detailing what her son was wearing when he was at the shop alone. And so in response, they were trying to strategize with, you know, within means to avoid being targeted. So that meant changing the hours of operation frequently. They tried to generate content after hours so it wouldn't look like they were actively in the store. During those times, they took turns between her and her husband overseeing the store so it wouldn't just be the son, or even allow him to be there to run the store at all. Despite those challenges, the bookstore was able to bring immense joy. They said they were and are determined not to become another headline in controversy. And they've worked tirelessly to create a safe space, but it's just not for the community, but for their own family. And so, you know, she detailed how when she moved into the space and was looking for a potential move in January, the landlord didn't try to inquire where the information came. They just explained to her, you know, well, let me know when you're moving so I can start allowing people to come visit the space. Right. So we can help somebody else, not necessarily trying to help her or help the family figure out how they can make the spot more secure. And she was explaining to the landlord, you know, concerns about the threats they were receiving. So instead of offering assistance, the landlord said the unit would be showcased to potential new tenants leading up to their potential departure. So she just didn't have support and security in that way from even the landlord. So they're closing at the end of this month, leaving at Fayetteville Street location. But they hope it's not going to be the end of the Liberation Bookstore, and they're going to work on some alternatives after, you know, some time to figure out the next move.
Yeah. One thing I do want to say is in regards to something that you said, with them changing around the times, that shouldn't have to happen.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have to happen. They shouldn't have to switch around their time. And for the landlord to just be like, okay, whatever, knowing that this is your property that you're getting these death threats to, and you're just like, oh, whatever. Now it makes me question you.
That's what I was thinking. That was my first thought. Because, the landlord to be so callous.
Right. And then it's like, now I don't know about all places. I've never owned a store. Right. Yeah. But wouldn't, like, for anti-theft situations, right, for a landlord, wouldn't they have cameras?
Cameras, insurance, something else that you're getting other than just renting the space. Yeah. But it some places, too, could be more detached.
Yeah.
But it still is just like, dang, you're not trying to offer, as long as you've had this space, you're not offering me any kind of assistance or contacts for extra security.
Right. And then the thing is, had this been, and again, like I said, I've never ran a store, I've never owned a store, anything like that. Mm-hmm. But had this been a white business, I have a really hard time believing that hearing about these death threats, if they were receiving death threats the way that they are, or the way that they were, had this been a white business, that no police officer or anything would have sat outside of the front of the store. Because they do, I know at my apartment complex that I was at, we had a courtesy officer. There were no type of courtesy officers, especially during a time where this business is being threatened at all.
And then it's like, with the type of threats they were receiving, how would a cop stop the phone call of somebody watching the store, calling a mom,
right,
describing what the son is wearing at that exact moment?
Right. But even just for a peace of mind.
Right.
For the people.
If something were to go down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, like, I feel like if there was an officer there, it would have beaten a lot of those threats.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, I just feel like had this been a white-owned store, it would have been a lot more people in the community being proactive and protecting this business.
But that's the thing, too. It's like, it shouldn't have to take them being white owners for people to want to step up to combat the type of energy they were receiving. And so it's upsetting to think, you know, people talking about, we shouldn't have to talk about slavery that was 400 years ago and why everything has to be about race. This is why. There is a children's bookstore that threatens people so much that they have to threaten death on the owners or family. You're threatening a child.
Exactly.
I don't know anybody that's more innocent than a child. And when we can't have these difficult conversations about why racism is so ingrained in our everyday life and why we should have reparations, why we should have history books about the civil rights and what that meant and what needs to happen moving forward, what it means to be anti-racist, what it means to be a country that was built on slavery and has profited and still continues to profit from slavery through the, you know, current evolution of it as mass incarceration and, you know, the war on drugs, why we have these issues. Literally, racism is so bad. It's jacking up life, the quality of life for white people. But because you have so much hatred in your heart, you can't even see that.
Right. And it's, I don't know, it doesn't sit right with me in the year of 2024 that we still have situations. Because, like, honestly, all that makes me think about is, like, how there were cities, black, like, fully black cities that were burned down.
Yeah.
Fully black cities that were, like, harassed by white people just for existing. And for that to happen in North Carolina, especially so close,
mm-hmm.
that it's just mind-boggling to me. And again, we shouldn't have to, like how you mentioned, we should not have to have all of these extra precautions. But the thing is, like, again, if it was another business that was not owned by Black people, it just bothers me how they would have been protected. And one, because it was a children's bookstore, how the innocence of that is not being protected by the community there. And people are like, because I'm pretty sure, like, people knew about those death threats that they were receiving. I'm pretty sure, like, that the owners of that bookstore said something.
Right. And it's news to me now. I knew about them when they opened, but I wasn't following the story or just their progress.
Yeah. I meant more like local, so like the Raleigh area versus.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Here. But no, but I'm saying, yeah, it's such that I'm learning more about their mission, Liberation Station. How freaking cute is that name?
Right.
And now learning about them having to close because of this. Like, that's how inconvenient race is in this country for people who are not white. And yeah, I'm gonna make everything about race. Yeah, I'm gonna talk about race. I don't care if that makes you uncomfortable. How much more uncomfortable can you be as a child trying to grow up and share your love of literature and learning and reading with other children? And that's a threat to people.
Right.
You don't think that's inconvenient? I just want to share books with people like me, to anybody. It's not like they say nobody can come in here and buy books but Black people. Why does you not being the center of the story mess with you so much? Everything else is considered a norm. Like you said, if it was a white business, it would have seemed as another bookstore.
Right. And yeah, I don't know. That is really upsetting.
Yeah, we have regressed so much in this country that we went from George Floyd encouraging businesses to, you know, have these financially backed missions to hire diversity, equity, inclusion positions, to now it being the new N-word. DEI, DEI hires is now become the number one target. We have regressed so much in this country. And yes, it's because of Trump. Yes, it's because of racism. But we've regressed so much, and people are so apathetic to want to combat the hate. I feel like it's, I'm not saying I'm not hopeful, because there are people who are still impassioned and hopeful and working towards getting back or getting to a position where we can have these conversations. But we gotta start buckling down and going as hard as the hateful people do. Hateful people enjoy being hateful. We don't have to be hateful or the same level of hateful, but we got to start getting petty too with the things we need to do to get equity in this country, because we already had slim pickings and things are just, like I said, regressing, because after Obama's 8 terms, it's just like, what can we do to dismantle that? And then when you start looking at the history of politics and how it has impacted other ways of life for us locally and nationally, you look at how long hate has been running a campaign to get back to the good old times. And it's going to take everybody who's marginalized to work together.
Right.
And like you said, not to be silent about what's going on.
Right. And then I also, just thinking back, I don't know if you remember, I don't know the name of the street, honestly, but there used to be a place here called the No Bookstore, and it was a Black-owned bookstore. Mm. And they sold soul food and stuff, too, so what it is.
Didn't know of this.
Yeah, I think I was in middle school. And I think by the time I got to high school, they were closed. But it makes me wonder if, I would hope not, because of where we're at and the history behind it, but it makes me wonder if that was a situation they were dealing with, too.
It's possible.
I would hope, especially not here, you know? Just knowing the history. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll keep an eye out on where the Liberation Station goes. But yeah, I hope that when the time comes, we do what we need to. Even, like we said, sometimes there's some stuff you do not want to do, but you gotta do it for the greater good.
Yeah.
Moving into some positive sports news. Dawn Staley becomes the first Black coach to win 3 D1 basketball titles. And I also think she was one of the first coaches, man or woman, to coach an undefeated campaign, 38-0.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she's the head coach of the University of South Carolina Gamecocks women's basketball team. She saw a dominant win over the University of Iowa in the NCAA championship game. The victory secured her team's undefeated season in her own 3rd national title. So it's her 3rd time doing it. A feat that has never been accomplished by a Black coach in college basketball history, men's or women's. So she that girl. A lot of people have been going off celebrating her just for a stellar season. Also just how well the team has played. It's like, you know, she won't be taking too many times, or she just play. She's the group. So I thought that was cool, but I think it's also not talked about too on a national level. She, like, just the WNBA is getting more media coverage this year, I think, with like 2K. Updates in the gaming world allowing you to play as some of the WNBA women, but also with how well the college women in the NCAA have been playing. A lot of people have been tapped in because it's like a decent game and people have been attending the game in person, but still not receiving that much national attention. So I hope that this and like NIL deals with the news of that and more of the colleges allowing the students to profit from, you know, the sponsorships they can get in college, I hope that starts changing up the game for women in the media coverage of women in sports. But yeah, like, and shout out to Dawn Staley. So I remember her from watching Martin. It was season 5, episode 6. I looked it up. Banging Hard in the Schoolyard. That's where Gina challenged Martin and his friends to a 3-on-3 game of basketball. You know, talking shit. And the dudes didn't know that Pam and Gina had some connections. And they were able to get the undefeated 1996 U.S. Women's Olympic basketball team to play them. And so, of course, that's when Martin had to fake out his injury to try to get some points. But Dawn Staley was one of those 3 women and just balling on them. It was Dawn Staley, Teresa Edwards, Rebecca Lobo, and Cheryl Swoops. So they kicked ass. And I thought that was just funny to know her from being an Olympic gold medalist to now just making more history. So it's just like, she's been in this. Right. Been in this game. So I just thought that was cool and funny to recall some of that history. So, yay, women in sports. And, of course, another, notch for Black history, aka American history.
Right.
And we can end the Sugar Cube today talking about Dreamville. So I think some of, you know, the major news that came out of this was J. Cole apologizing for the Kendrick Lamar diss track. J. Cole said he felt terrible after releasing a song amid a fellow rapper Kendrick Lamar last week. He said he vowed to pull the track off streaming services. The title 7-Minute Drill. Cole's song was a reply to Lamar's verse on the hit single Like That, in which the star Lamar asserted his dominance in the rap game. You know, who the big three. Fuck the big three. Cole hit back by saying Lamar had fallen off like the Simpsons and called his latest album tragic. But speaking on Sunday from Dreamville, Cole apologized for his lame and goofy response. He said, I ain't gonna lie to y'all. past few days felt terrible. I damn near had a relapse. And he was talking about not a relapse in drugs, but a relapse in just, like, the path he's on to being more at peace. And I guess, like I said earlier today, in general. So he asked for forgiveness from Kendrick Lamar, called his song a misstep, and then he hoped to get back to his true path. Why are you over there cracking up?
I'm not cracking up. Jermaine needs to get in the booth. Jermaine needs to get in the booth. I'm not trying to hear that. This is a sport.
Okay.
In the booth.
I wasn't mad. I also like rap beats. But I felt too, okay, so maybe because I was watching so many, I didn't need this one from the man. I was looking at, you know, Lowrill and JT going back and forth, just came off, you know,
oh, yeah.
Meg and Nicki Minaj. And then there was, I forgot, somebody in Lotto. And then you got, this is not necessarily rap beef, but it is beef. We got Azalea Banks talking about Dolce.
Oh, yeah.
And.
But see, that's the thing. This, like, it's the one, he already released the song, and now that's why I don't like the backtracking. You already released the song, and I just don't understand the need for an apology. Like,
dang, we can't grow up no more. We can't apologize.
But for what? Like, what did he say that was wrong?
Oh, he was, as a creative and an artiste, I understand where he's coming from. I feel like if he felt the way he felt, he would have put out whatever he put out and just left it there. But he also spoke to being pressured to write a comeback. He was like, you know, he had hella people calling him saying, what you gonna say, bro? What you gonna say? You next, bro? You next? Like, he was, like, conflicted. He said, I know how I feel about my peers, these two rappers that I've been blessed to even stand beside, but the world wants to see blood. And, like, when you get to a certain point of where he's at, where you can have space to chill out and be yourself, he might have realized, like we said, we evolve. He was like, I ain't about this rap shit. I ain't trying to drop blood. I just want to make some songs. But you know, like, hit a couple bars.
I can understand that. But the thing is, this isn't, like, East Coast, West Coast beef.
Yeah.
Like, Tupac. Nobody's going to end this in the ground, you know, like it's not that, like, again, it's like a
sport. Is that shade
for what,
that it's not as violent as it used to be,
or
could be, because I know the younger rapper kids, boys, men, the youngs and the babies, they shooting and
yeah stuff. That I feel like that's weird. Like, I feel like that is weird, but no, I'm saying it in the, like, because the whole not wanting to shed blood or whatever, like, I feel like it's not that serious, like, when it comes to this, you know, like, when it comes to this situation, because it's literally, like, the way I see it is, like, a poetry, let's put it that way.
No, I definitely get you, but that's what I'm saying, like, as an artist, for me to write some hard hitters, sometimes I have to feel a certain way about a person if that's the subject of my poem. I need to really not mess with you, like, I think because he sees them as his peers and not his adversaries, like, I don't know, I feel like that's a boss move to me, because it's like, I don't even see you as competition, bro. We're on the same page, but you're a peer. I heard what you're saying, you woofing, but the heat that I did release, I wasn't even my best heat, because I'm not in that type of mindset. So I feel like it's reverse psychology, and you let people know, like, it ain't even that serious for me. And if I really felt like being out for blood, I would come with something hot, but I ain't feel, you know, that was my best bar, so I'm gonna pull it from streaming services, because, like,
I think that's what frustrates me, because it's like, did you lie? Because, like, that's the thing, like, the question now becomes for me, it's like, did you lie about anything you said?
Kind of, he said he wasn't. He said, how can I say his last album was really tragic? You know, it was goofy for me to try to lie and say he's not a great rapper.
All right. I mean, all right.
You wanted him to go for the juggler.
If he wouldn't have responded, I'd be like, I feel the way I do because he did respond and he released it, but then backtracked. I don't like that. like, backtracking. He shouldn't have released it. And again, like, my whole thing is, like, did you lie? Because you said, like, if you said what you said and you meant that, why are you apologizing? And why take it back? Like, we heard it. Like, we could probably look it up on YouTube and hear it. But I don't like that. Like, if you're going to say something and release it publicly for the world, whether you felt like you were pressured or not, like, I don't know. I don't like that. I mean, obviously people can, like, grow, you know, people can grow and evolve. But the thing is, like, you grew in what, how many days?
That's you, the GMOs. It's the GMOs in the food.
Yeah.
he probably had a Lunchable. And he said, you know what? I don't even feel how I felt when I was, like, told I should be writing a response.
I mean,
he had his Lunchable, some Tyson chicken nuggets. And he said, you know what? You know what I'm saying? So, what you call it? Bread chicken?
Yeah.
Some bread chicken. It was like, look, I don't even feel the same way I felt when I wrote this.
Like,
that's what it is. It's the food. He has some
antibiotics. I'm holding him to that. Because, one, me, I feel like I don't know. I'm not going to say something and apologize if I meant something. Now, I'll apologize about the delivery, but we ain't the same. Sometimes I'll take stuff back, but not when I mean something, you know? But we
are. No, I definitely, I think if you say something in anger, you got to be ready to stand on what you say after you calm down.
Right, because I'm like, what you apologizing for? Like, that's like, that made me
mad. You said that. Like, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Why are you apologizing? Suck it up. No apologize.
Okay, so if he doesn't apologize and just, like, pulled it off streaming.
Oh, my God.
Still no.
That would have made me angry.
Okay.
Still, because, like, I feel like it just shouldn't have been released if that was the case. Like,
he thought he was under a deadline because he... You know, he older. He's been in the game a little bit, so he knows the clock is ticking for when you need to respond.
And I feel like that's what I was going to say next. I'm like, if you released it based on how other people will receive that and not because you wanted to, that's another issue. Because if you didn't want to say anything, you shouldn't have said anything at all and just stuck to your guns. But again, it goes back to, like, so... You lied, basically. You released this and you were just telling lies. You didn't even believe what you said.
But don't all rappers lie? Drake be lying.
Do they be lying in beef? I mean, not necessarily beef, but do they be lying, like, in, like, sparring, like, verbal sparring? Like, that's the thing. Like, I feel like
Drake was lying about hiding his child.
You know, I didn't even bring
Drake. Drake was lying, you know, hiding his baby. A lie is an untold truth. So, yeah, I feel like all of them lie.
Yeah, but...
They are not all in the street doing the same thing. The streets are not that big.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the streets they run on.
Mm-mm.
They're not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-mm.
Maybe it's because... I don't know. Like, now, recently I saw that he had said some... Like, he said some controversial stuff at one point. So, I ain't know nothing about it until recently. But prior to that, like, prior to him, you know, talking out the side of his neck, apparently at one point, like, I was a huge J. Cole fan.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, that's why I felt the way I did. Like,
got you.
I don't know.
Another thing people were talking. No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying he needs to re-release it.
Maybe he. Could just rewrite it and improve it. I don't know. I think once you pull it.
Yeah, now don't say nothing. Don't
maybe just move on.
At that point, if he was just going to pull it, and don't apologize. Don't say nothing. Say it to him in private.
Just release some other music and act like nothing happened.
Yeah, well, no, it's public disrespect. You know what people say. Public disrespect, public apology. But still, like, why do you... I don't know. Why do you feel like you need to? And then I'm gonna be honest, I didn't listen to the whole Kendrick thing because, like, I don't really listen to his music anyway, so I don't know exactly what he said in the first place.
I listened to be informed, but not from a place of like, I didn't listen to it the way I listened to Cowboy Carter. I went in with the intention to listen from beginning to end, and I sat with it. With what's going on with the rap beef, I listened just to hear what people said, and I was like, oh, okay.
What did he say? Because, like, I heard clips on TikTok from Kendrick's, but what did he say in particular to?
Oh, just when he, it's from, like, a Trail of Difference. You would have to listen to more than just Kendrick verse on the song with featured Metro Boomin. But he was saying that, you know, the last song where Kendrick was listed among the big, like, top big three, he was like, I'm above them, I'm not even, he was like, fuck them, I'm like, I'm better than them. So that's why people felt like, oh, he's, like, directly talking to you, J. Cole, like, J. Cole specific, like, he said, I'm above you.
He ain't apologized, but no. He didn't apologize to him, but he felt the need. Okay. Maybe I'll get over it someday.
I would recommend listening to, dang, I don't know the songs off the top of my head. I'll send you the three songs you need to listen to hear the references. And so it's not over the course of as quickly as the beef progressed and ended. So,
yeah, because I'm gonna be honest, I'm like, I don't really listen to music.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the three songs related to.
Yeah, I see one of them is Like That, right?
Yes, yeah. Like That is the, yeah, that's the one that just came out.
That's the one I was seeing the clip of.
Gotcha. Other thing people were talking about at Dreamville was the price of the food versus the serving size. I thought that was funny. So dude took to social media, TikTok, to talk about how he, I think, got like 2-3 chicken tenders and like 7 fries. I think he paid $36. Huh? It was funny to me. because you're at a festival, everything's going to be marked up. We're also still experiencing inflation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things. So what were you expecting? But when I was planning this show with my mom, aka Angela, she just blurted out. She said, you should have tucked a sandwich in your titties. And I don't know why, just when we were playing it, I busted out laughing. It was so funny. But my question is to you and the audience. Do you wrap the titty sandwich in foil or plastic wrap for the festival?
It depends on the type. Like, is it like a
food? I'm done. I don't know, whatever sandwich you make at the house. I guess that would matter.
Yeah. I'll put it on a bagel, so probably in foil.
Okay, and then if you aren't the person bringing the titty sandwich, are you eating?
No.
Some of your friends? Okay.
No.
Even if she, like, double wrapped it and put it in a Ziploc bag, you're not. Because I've seen, we've seen.
Hopefully, like, the slit.
Bye.
No, thank you.
Bye. Because I've seen comedians and different people, you know, big bosomed booty women can pull a whole bottle sometimes. Just a mini. I mean, I have definitely gotten drinks into the club. A couple of Mickeys. And it was like, it's a warm shot, but people was taking the warm Mickey shots.
I've never been to
one,
but I feel like I'm too old now.
You're never too old to go out and dance there. We now can go to the 30 and up or the 25 and up clubs.
Oh, that is true. I can't
dance. We are now grown and sexy.
I will be taking up space because I don't dance. I can't dance. I be trying.
Oh, just get. We got to do that. That's on our list. We got to add it to the list. And get you some sips and get you the right music. It also depends on the DJ, too. Sometimes you just need good music.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And I still feel like I can't dance. So I'm like, look a mess.
But yeah, that has been Sugar Cubes. Let us know, what kind of food are you bringing to the festivals this summer? How are you going to package them? Because I know you're not spending all that money on the food. Or are you the type of girly guy that has a budget for it? Let us know in the comments. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Talking Brown Sugar. Whether you are a returning, faithful fan, or you're listening for the first time today, thank you for listening. That's helping the show grow just from your downloads. You can also help us by sharing the show, subscribing to our show wherever you listen to us, on your favorite podcast app, as well as YouTube. Like and share our posts when you see them online. Continue to interact with us. And as always, tell a friend, tell a cousin, tell your coworker about the show that you're listening to. Also, you can email us at talkingbrown.sugar@gmail.com to promote your business, as well as share any topics with us you think we should cover. See you soon.
Wellness check. I don't know if you've seen an uptick in advertisements for like FanDuel. I think it's like DraftKings, the online gambling.
Yeah, all the time on social media.
Well, no surprise, surprise. Gambling addiction hotlines say their volume has been up and callers are younger as online sports betting booms. Smartphone apps and pervasive ads have taken sports gambling mainstream. Experts warn that has likely led to the rise in problematic gaming. And state after state, centers for problem gambling are noticing an alarming rise in calls to the helplines. The circumstances reported are also getting more severe, according to the directors of 5 problem gambling centers, a gambling researcher, and an addiction counselor. People are filing for bankruptcy or losing homes or relationships. At the same time, callers are skewing younger, often men in their 20s and 30s. Directors say the mounting call volume has coincided with the legalization of sports betting and rising popularity of sports betting apps. We believe nationwide the rate and severity of gambling problems have increased across the United States since 2018. Keith White, executive director for the National Council on Problem Gambling, a nonprofit organization devoted to minimizing the costs and harms of gambling addiction. The group operates the helpline 1-800-GAMBLER. We have every reason to believe that the growth of online sports betting is a major contributing factor to the increase of gambling problems. In 2018, the Supreme Court struck down a law banning sports betting. To date, 38 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized the practice, according to the American Gaming Association, which advocates for the industry. 30 of those states allow mobile sports betting. Florida legalized sports betting in November, and it has seen a doubling of calls to its council on compulsive gambling. Pennsylvania's Council on Compulsive Gambling saw a volume more than double from 2020 to 2020.
One thing I want to know in regards to that, especially like the rise of those apps being promoted, whether it's on social media or like in ads on like YouTube and stuff like that. And the fact that the gambling, it was legalized in Florida.
Yeah, Florida, you know, North Carolina just legalized this past month, I think.
Who runs these things? That's what I want to know. Like,
definitely for-profit companies. And that's the thing. It's, they list DraftKings, FanDuel. FanDuel has amassed roughly 2.5 million average monthly players and sometimes suspends or even closes accounts if customers display problematic activity, like wagering higher and higher amounts after a series of losing bets. It says we're making sure that small percentages of people in the United States that should not be using our platform, similar to how they should not be drinking alcohol if they have a problem with alcohol, are not able to get access to it.
A spokesperson said for the company and the client to specify how many such instances there have been. DraftKings had 3.5 million average monthly paid users at the end of last year, up from 1.5 million at the end of 2020, and declined to be quoted for the story. So they said despite companies' efforts, there's still a higher risk of addiction now that sports betting is more accessible and highly advertised. I saw a commercial for the sports betting in between watching an online Sunday service.
What?
Yeah. Usually watching, you know, on certain like gospel channels or something.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the advertisements are somewhat related to or mild, but then it was like North Carolina FanDuel is here for you to get your sports bets in. I was just like, yo, they have some serious marketing dollars to be everywhere,
right?
Everywhere. And they definitely are paying Kevin Hart, because I've seen him so many times.
That's so random.
During the Super Bowl, he was in the DraftKings commercial. And then, like, specifically for North Carolina, I've heard it on podcasts. I've seen it everywhere. And I don't even bet on sports. No, you're fine.
I'm going to be honest. Like, when I see those ads, and sometimes it's like the apps where it's like, oh, you can win money and stuff like that. Eat the FanDuel's and all that other stuff, DraftKings. I always look at those and I just think they're a scam and I keep scrolling.
It sounds like it, right?
Yeah.
And so the experts are pointing out particular aspects of online sports betting that they say can make it more addictive than traditional gambling. For instance, the focus on sports makes bets seem less risky, since people have prior knowledge of a player's stats or team's performance. And unlike a casino, mobile apps allow people to wager money directly from their bank account. So, you know, you've seen the joke where it's like, I'm going in with this $20 cold cash, and that's all I got to work with. But now it's like, they can take the money right at you.
That feel even more like a scam.
But you know, we know why it's going off the way it is. It's because the federal government collected last year more than $8 billion in gambling tax revenue. Yet they haven't put a single penny of those in windfall profits back into the health system. Wow.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised at that. Because, like, how much do they take when it comes to the lottery in Texas?
I don't even know. It said Democrats in the House introduced a bill in January that would set aside 50% of the revenue from the federal tax on sports wagers for gambling addiction and treatment and research.
Mm.
So I'm guessing that didn't make it through or wasn't supported.
We see why some places legalized it. As much as they're getting. Mm.
And it makes me think about just gaming and microtransactions. And I think there's a pending class action lawsuit against the games like Roblox. Not sure about Fortnite, but Roblox for sure, because that's the younger audiences. But because it's encouraging kids to gamble, essentially, and they're becoming addicted to the game and the microtransactions, because it's like, you know, it's just $1, $3 here for this skin or this in-game tool or car or something. And so it's prepping kids to become basically addicted to the purchasing aspect.
Mm.
And I think it's something similar to the Choco Candy Crush has on some memories. It's similar to that, and it's like, we really should be doing, and I want to look into more research that's being done about mobile and just the microtransactions of gaming in general and how that's being.
Yeah, because I ain't even going to lie to you. Them gotcha games, they be getting me.
Gotcha games? What is that?
Like, so Gachapon. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's like, essentially, and I don't know if they're just strictly in Japan, but they're physical things. Kind of like how, you know, Did you ever go to, I think it's called, it was called Fuddruckers or Fuddruckers?
Mm-hmm. I like saying the name Fuddruckers.
Yeah. you know how they had the 25, like you get the little tattoos or like,
uh-huh.
Yeah, that's essentially what a gacha is. But they have like other stuff like figurines, and some of them have like, at least the ones in Japan, they'll have like folders and stuff like that, like Sanrio stuff, like, and it's like limited edition if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, they do those digitally on like a lot of games, and they're just called gachas.
Oh,
yep. So like, I think I showed you a screenshot of one of those mobile games I was playing.
Yes,
with Sanrio characters. Yep. Yeah. They have them on there too, and it's like to get a certain room, like certain decor in the room on the game. Listen, they got me in a chokehold.
No, they started us early. They started us early. I remember Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I used to say, you know, you get a little bucket, a little coin cup or bucket, and my mom would be like, "All right, you got one more of these little cups." I mean, it was a nice, heavy little cup. It was heavy. I would play it out, try to get tickets so I could get something at the counter that I didn't need. It probably cost $2. But I would play so hard, and I didn't care what I cashed my tickets out for. I never needed any of that stuff. But I remember the hype I had in my brain, just that dopamine hit of like, I'm going to cash these tickets in for something amazing. And running back to my mom like, I need more coins. And so it's just like, as you get older now, it's like sports betting. You know, all you have to do is pay $10 and you get a free $200. Who's not going to want to try?
And the thing is, with the $10, so this is what I think I'm a little bit lost on. But the $10 they give, and they get the free $200.
The promotion.
That's not something they can deposit into their account, right?
Mm-mm. So okay. I think it's like you have to bet 10 real dollars from yourself, from your bank account, and you get 200 in-game dollars to make a bet. And that bet that you make with the in-game moolah can make you some actual moolah if you don't lose it.
Mm-mm.
So yeah, definitely be considerate of what games your kids are playing, what games you're playing. Are you going a little crazy? Look at your transactions. If you have an Apple phone, look at how many receipts you got coming in your email about, you know, they add taxes in North Carolina to digital purchases. Them things add up. Start looking at your monthly budget. And if you are struggling, you can call Helplines 1-800-GAMBLER.
Angela from Talking Brown Sugar. Hope everyone is doing well. I'm on a little vacate in Oklahoma. Just having a little fun, seeing little sights. And I'll be back with you soon. And always, we out.
Thank you, Jasmine, for joining me today. You've been a great co-host.
No problem at all.
Yeah, I'm going to have to invite you back. Maybe when you do a panel discussion or just a larger discussion, that's what I'm going to have to invite you back.
Yes, please do. I enjoyed it. I had fun.
Awesome. I have fun. I'm Roger the daughter.
And I am Jasmine, filling in for Angela the mom.
And this has been Talking Brown Sugar. We out.
We out.